Welcome to The Connection, where humans and aliens converse, and where all the dots are connected. I'm Nancy of Zeta Talk, an emissary for aliens from Zeta Reticuli. They are here to warn of great cataclysms on Earth and advise how to survive this. The pending pole shift is not the end. Man will make his next leap forward to live a better time when aliens will live among us. Who was Emanuel Velikovsky? He was a peer of Einstein, and they played chess together often. In fact, when Einstein died, he was in the process of reading his friend Velikovsky's book, Earth in Upheaval, as he was found sprawled over this book, laid open on his desk when he died. Or perhaps there was something particularly upsetting in the book. Einstein was aware of periodic global cataclysms, the puzzle as to why they occurred, an issue he and Velikovsky debated, apparently. Einstein espoused Hapgood's sliding crust theory as an explanation for wandering poles, the only explanation that fit, stating this was the best explanation for what the Earth stands in evidence of. Sliding crust? Periodic cataclysms? If this sounds like pole shifts caused by the periodic passage of the planet of the crossing, also known as Nibiru or Planet X, that's exactly what everyone was looking at and trying to puzzle out. Well, they weren't aware of Planet X at this time, but they knew from folklore that there was something to do with a passing object in the sky. So they were trying their best and theorized perhaps Venus had gone wacko. During the era of Einstein and Velikovsky, knowledge of Planet X was not yet available. It was discovered in 1983 by NASA and JPL when they put up their infrared balloon and sighted it via infrared, the IRAS team. And this hit Washington Post front page in 1983 on December 31st of that year. It wasn't until Sitchin's translations of ancient Sumerian documents detailing their knowledge of the planet of the crossing, Nibiru, passing through every 3,600 years, had been done, that the periodicity of 3,600 years made sense. Thus, Einstein and Velikovsky puzzled, looking at the evidence the Earth provided. And I quote from Zeta Talk on Velikovsky, written August 1995. Emanuel Velikovsky was a genius on par with Einstein, which is a fact seldom mentioned by his detractors. Both he and Einstein were star children, and indeed were friends who engaged in the type of friendly argument only two geniuses could engage in. Velikovsky's mission was to set mankind to thinking about the periodic cataclysms that have so dramatically left their mark on the Earth and human history. Like Einstein, he was berated for presenting what most of mankind does not want to think about, bad news. Mountains obviously thrown skyward under extreme pressure, the ruins of great civilization with no reason for demise, flash-frozen carcasses of healthy mastodons with no evident cause of death, all this is put over the wall and not dealt with. End of the quote. Was Velikovsky vilified? No pun intended, but he was indeed attacked. His books documented solid evidence of what the Earth herself says about periodic evidence, as well as folklore relating, including folklore from the Bible. But these were banned from libraries and schools. Ages and Chaos, in his second book, Worlds in Collision, dealt with the period around the Jewish Exodus, the time of the last pole shift. Ages and Chaos documented the physical history of the era, and Worlds in Collision had as its emphasis the political and cultural history. In Velikovsky's words, from the foreword in his book Ages and Chaos, and I quote, "Unable to prove the book or any part of it wrong or any quoted document spurious, The members of that group indulged in outbursts of unscientific fury. They suppressed the book in the hands of its publisher by the threat of a boycott of all the company's textbooks. Despite the fact that when the book was already on the presses, the publisher agreed to submit it to the censorship of three prominent scientists, and it passed that censorship. When a new publisher took the book over, this group tried to suppress it there, too, by threats. They forced the dismissal of a scientist and an editor who openly took an objective stand, and thus drove many members of academic faculties into clandestine reading of Worlds in Collision and correspondence with its author. End of the quote. Why was this done? Because he carried a message that frightened people, the message that such cataclysms had happened to mankind before and could happen again. The messenger was attacked. Not an uncommon story, as I, Nancy, the Zeta Talk emissary, delivering the Zeta Talk message about the coming pole shift, am well aware of. Carl Sagan, more or less on his deathbed, had this to say about Velikovsky. And I quote from page 91 of Carl Sagan's book, Cosmos, written in 1980. The worst aspect of the Velikovsky affair is not that his hypotheses were wrong or in contradiction to firmly established facts, but that some who called themselves scientists attempted to suppress Velikovsky's work. End of the quote from Carl Sagan. Velikovsky's books, published before his death in 1955, went out of print. Velikovsky's approach was scientific, using well-documented evidence and cross-checking everything, looking for patterns. In his words, and I quote from his foreword in Ages and Chaos, I searched the records of one land after another and went from one generation to another, taking from everything hints and clues, evidence and proof. Because I had to discover and to collate them, this book is written like a detective story. End of the quote. Why was it necessary to be a detective and put the pieces of the puzzle together? Because after a pole shift, written records keep going to heck and records get lost. It is without argument that during the Jewish Exodus, the Egyptian census keepers stopped taking the census and the records were strewn about in the street with no other cause for the wreck than a geological catastrophe. The Jewish slaves walked away from their masters, old women and toddlers alike, and were not stopped. Egyptian record-keeping did not pick up again for hundreds of years, a gap great enough that no one is certain, from the records, just when the Jewish Exodus occurred. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Lost Records, written September 1999. During cataclysms and for many hundreds of years following, people become terribly discombobulated. Look what happened to the Egyptian records after the last pole shift. The Jewish Exodus occurred, and with the Jews able to leave their slavehood, taking their old, their lame, and their babes in arms with them. They escaped, one and all, from their captors. Not because they were all that swift, but because their captors were very distracted. The hail, the insects disturbed by the groaning in the earth and running in every direction, the volcanic eruptions, the earthquakes, and the fact that they were experiencing a very long day, the sun quite noticeably slowed in its progression across the sky. All this distracted the Egyptians. After the last cataclysm, the very careful Egyptian records which kept census, the grain stores which maintained the rich, all this went to hell. And for centuries afterward, people lost track of just how many years passed until records began to be kept again. This happened all over the world during each cataclysm. What happened to the great cities of China? Records are disrupted. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Because the conclusion that the catastrophe experienced during that era was great and caused by a passing body in the sky, the message was frightening. It was rejected, attacked as being only folklore, only based on stories, and thus a wrong conclusion. Thus, Velikovsky's last book, Earth in Upheaval, took the focus on concentrating on geological evidence collected by others to refute these attacks. In other words, scientific and unarguable fact. What are some of the facts that Velikovsky located and put as pieces of the puzzle into the whole? I quote from his book, Earth in Upheaval. In 1797, the body of a mammoth with flesh, skin, and hair was found in northeastern Siberia. The flesh had the appearance of freshly frozen beef. It was edible, and wolves and sled dogs fed on it without harm. The ground must have been frozen ever since the day of their entombment. Had it not been frozen, the bodies of the mammoths would have been putrefied in a single summer, but they remained unspoiled for some thousands of years. In some mammoths, when discovered, even the eyeballs were still preserved. All this shows that the cold became suddenly extreme and knew no relenting afterward. In the stomachs and between the teeth of the mammoths were found plants and grasses that do not grow now in northern Siberia, but are now found in southern Siberia. Microscopic examination of the skin showed red blood corpuscles, which was proof not only of a sudden death, but that the death was due to suffocation either by gases or water. End of the quote. Well, was Velikovsky wrong? Not by a long shot. Recently, more evidence and more carcasses have been unearthed. One in Finland that hit Discovery magazine and their TV shows in 1999. I quote from the pages of the Trouble Times website, an observation on this. According to Discovery magazine, April 1999, the American mastodon roamed here for about 4 million years until about 11,500 years ago. Another type, that Mammuthus primigenius, roamed around 400,000 years until 3,900 years ago. Both extinction times could be multiples of 3,600 years. The heyday of the woolly mammoth was the Pliocene epoch, stretching from 1.8 million years ago to the end of the last ice age 11,000 years ago. Mammoths thrived particularly well in Siberia, where dry grasslands once stretched for hundreds of miles, supporting a vibrant ecosystem of mammoths, bisons, and other jumbo herbivores. The mammoth fossils on Wrangel Island are the youngest that have been found. It was there, apparently, that mammoths made their last stand. They died out only 3,800 years ago. End of the quote from Trouble Times. Then, an excerpt from a recent discovery program on the frozen mammoth carcasses. And I quote, "It had always been thought that the mammoth died out about 10,000 years ago, with the end of the ice ages, but the tusk appeared to be 7,000 years old. It was so unlikely, so they tested 5 more tusks, but the new dates pointed to an even more remarkable conclusion. Hidden up there on Wrangel Island in the Arctic, the mammoth hadn't just survived the end of the ice age, it was walking these hills at the time of the Egyptian pharaohs, only 3,500 years ago. This discovery has led to the re-examination of the complex chain of cause and effect that made mammoths die out everywhere else." End of the quote from the Trouble Times pages. And the Zeta state, it is no accident that their frozen state indicates the crust of the Earth moved into the polar circle. This is what happens during pole shifts. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Mastodons, written July 2001. "The mastodon, or mammoth, is a species that went extinct during the past few pole shifts, primarily when the grasslands they browsed in Siberia were drawn rapidly into the new polar circle, but were drawn into water and drowned, and when far enough north, the mastodons were flash frozen. If the mastodons were not flash frozen, they would be in some sort of state of decay, perhaps the skin preserved, but the internal organs a mush. This was not the case, as your recent documentations on the frozen state of these preserved beasts shows. So if flash frozen, and frozen steadily since that date, then how did the mastodons get green grass and buttercups in their stomachs? A fast trot to the Arctic Circle? Does anyone presume they ate snow? These were herbivores. Their grasslands were moved during pole shifts. the remains of mastodons that were not far enough into the polar circle to be completely frozen are bones, and the ivory that has been harvested from the ivory islands for centuries. The bodies rotted, the ivory did not. A wealth of ivory with no flesh to disturb those shipping the tusks off to become piano keys. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. I quote again from Earth in Upheaval. Daly observed that in a great many places all around the world, there is uniform emergence of the shoreline of 18 to 20 feet. In the Southwest Pacific, on the islands belonging to the Samoa group, but spread over 200 miles, same emergence is evident. Nearly halfway around the world, at St. Helena in the South Atlantic, the lava is punctuated by dry sea caves, the floors of which are covered with water-worn pebbles, now dusty because untouched by the surf. The emergence there is also 20 feet. At the Cape of Good Hope, caves and beaches also prove recent and sensible uniform emergence to the extent of about 20 feet. Marine terraces indicating similar emergence are found along the Atlantic coast from New York to the Gulf of Mexico for at least 1,000 miles along the coast of eastern Australia, along the coasts of Brazil, Southwest Africa, and many islands in the Pacific, Atlantic, and Indian Oceans. The emergence is recent as well as of the same order of magnitude, 20 feet. Judging from the condition of beaches, terraces, and caves, the emergence seems to have been simultaneous on every shore. In Daly's opinion, the cause lies in the sinking of the level of all seas on the globe. Alternatively, Daly thinks it could have resulted from a deepening of the oceans or from an increase in their areas. Of special interest is the timing of the change. Daly estimated the sudden drop of ocean level to have occurred some 3,000 to 4,000 years ago. End of the quote from Earth in Upheaval. There's that multiple of 3,600 years again. Was Willikowski wrong? Not by a long shot. And I quote from ABC News, December 3rd, 1999, article titled, Scientists Challenge Conventional Sea Level Theory. Australian scientists say they have discovered evidence of rapid change in world sea levels and of a dramatic fall in geologically recent times, directly challenging current conventional wisdom. Dr. Robert Baker of the University of New England in the New South Wales county town of Armidale has tapped the secrets of worm coatings on once submerged rocks to shake established theory that sea levels are presently as high as they have ever been. Based on height measurements of worm coatings on rocks now well above sea level and carbon dating tests which show them to be as recent as 3,500 years old, Baker argues that sea levels have not been steady since the last ice age, as is commonly believed. Instead, he told Australia's ABC television, it changed rapidly 3,000 to 5,000 years ago. It means that the whole natural system is unstable. Baker and his colleagues at New England University say the sea level may have fallen quickly 3,500 years ago by as much as a meter in just 10 to 50 years. The conventional wisdom has been that sea levels haven't been higher. Contrary evidence was something that they weren't prepared to accept. Baker's theories, which he first aired 20 years ago, were initially rejected but are now about to receive a wider audience with their publication in the respected journal Marine Biology. End of the quote from ABC News. 3,500 years ago? Pretty close to that 3,600 year signature we're tracking. And if humans struggle with the cause, the Zetas, as usual, can explain. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Prior Shift, written in March 1998. You will not find the prior South Pole out there, out over water, a 3,600-year-old melt and rebuilding left no trace. But the prior North Pole should leave no doubt, as the island of Greenland, with volcanoes melting the glaciers away in great floods, is still more heavy with ice than all that has accumulated over the current waterborne poles to date within the past 3,600 years. Prior to the last pole shift, there was a slightly colder Europe, a slightly warmer Russia. And why did the continents rent so that the oceans dropped such a significant degree into the rifts during the last shift? The crust was jerked to and fro rapidly. The violent passage was enough to heave the floor of the Red Sea and to heap the waters up into glass mountains so a desperate band of Jews could dash forward to safety, with this dash their only choice other than a brutal and vengeful death for all. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. If the deep ocean rift in the Atlantic was where the waters of the oceans went, to drop the sea level 18 to 20 feet worldwide, has this ever been the reverse? I quote from the respected journal Science. From the University of Toronto, April 2002, Volume 2, Issue 3. Article titled, Antarctic Ice Sheet Key to Sudden Sea Level Rise. Physicists from Canada, the United States, and Britain have concluded that a massive and unusually abrupt rise in sea level about 14,000 years ago was caused by the partial collapse of ice sheets in Antarctica, solving a mystery scientists have been heatedly debating for more than a decade. Near the end of the last ice age, the Earth's sea level rose over 20 meters, four times faster than usual for that time period, and at least 20 times faster than sea levels are rising now, report the geophysicists. The cause of this event, called the Global Meltwater Pulse 1A, first identified in 1989, has been unknown until now. The scientists say their research not only pinpoints the source of the meltwater pulse, it also makes the case that significant climatic events can occur very rapidly and unpredictably. End of the quote. There's that 3,600-year signature again, as 14,200 is a precise multiple of 3,600. 4 times 3,600 equals 14,200. Frozen mastodons and mammoths, falling and rising sea levels, well, what else? I quote again from Earth in Upheaval. All other theories on the origin of the ice ages having failed, there remains an avenue of approach which, already early in the discussion, was chosen by several geologists, a shift in the terrestrial poles. If for some reason the poles had moved, old polar ice would have moved out of the Arctic and Antarctic circles and into new regions. The glacial cover of the Ice Age could have been the polar ice cap of an earlier epoch. The continent of Antarctica is larger than Europe. It has not a single tree, not a single bush, not a single blade of grass. Very few fungi have been found. Storms of great velocity circle the Antarctic most of the year. Shackleton, during his expedition to Antarctica in 1907, found fossil wood in the sandstone. Then he discovered 7 seams of coal. The seams are each between 3 and 7 feet thick. Associated with the coal is sandstone containing coniferous wood. Spitsbergen, in the Arctic Circle, is as far north from Oslo in Norway as Oslo is from Naples. Hare identified 136 species of fossil plants from Spitsbergen. Among the plants were pines, firs, spruces, and cypresses, also elms, hazels, and water lilies. At the northernmost tip of Spitsbergen Archipelago, a bed of black and lustrous coal 25 to 30 feet thick was found. Spitsbergen is buried in darkness for half the year and is now almost continuously buried under ice and snow. At some time in the remote past, Corals grew and are still found on the entire fringe of polar North America, in Alaska, Canada, and Greenland. In later times, fig palms bloomed within the Arctic Circle. End of the quote from Villikowski. Hatberg, a compatriot of Villikowski, suggested that a crustal shift was the most likely explanation for the wandering pole phenomena, and it certainly is an explanation for the ice ages. How could it be that the last ice age over France was possible when at the same time Siberia, at the same latitude, was warmer? Grasslands where great numbers of mammoths grazed, those herbivores, cousins of the elephants needing to eat grass year-round. Did the sun wink out as it passed over France and then blaze as it passed over Siberia? They're at the same latitude now. Clearly, France was further north then and Siberia further south then. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Wandering Poles, written February 2002. Confusion exists over why the ice in Antarctica dates back, apparently, for many pole shift periods. If one analyzes the last few shifts, it becomes apparent that the South Pole was either over partway Antarctica or nearby in the ocean. When a pole is over water, near land, the land mass retains its ice under the influence of this large block of ice afloat. This is due to cold water washing against the land mass, as well as air currents. The prior shift moved the North Pole from Greenland to its present location. Prior to that, it was over the East Siberian Sea, having pulled Siberia northward when the largest number of mammoth die-off occurred. Tracing the North Pole over the past few shifts, one sees that it spent a time over Scandinavia, where it resided between the fourth and fifth shift back. When it moved from Scandinavia into the Arctic, north of Siberia, Europe warmed up, its glaciers melting. Prior to Scandinavia, the North Pole centered over North America. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. The last ice age over France supposedly ended 10,000 years ago. 10,800 being a multiple of 3,600, that's pretty close to the 3,600-year signature. And I quote from the Seattle Times, an article written September 10, 1996, on how lodgepole pine forests suddenly died 10,900 years ago. Well, that's that 3,600-year times 3 signature. And I quote, the weather here changed so fast and so severely that the forest of the lodgepole pine that had succeeded ice age glaciers died in a blink. End of the quote. What happened to make Seattle so suddenly cold then, 10,900 years ago? Why, the crust moved, warming France and Scandinavia and pulling the cold spot someplace else. Per the Zetas, the ice ages over France and Scandinavia were between 4 and 5 pole shifts back. That would put this time frame between 14,400 years and 18,000 years ago. Per the book Early Man in the New World by Kenneth McGowan, published in 1950, there are charts of major glacial changes 18,000 years ago, which is 3,600 times 5, and 25,000 years ago, which is 3,600 times 7 approximately, 40,000 years ago, which is 3,600 times 11 approximately, and 65,000 years ago, which is 3,600 times 18. There's that 3,600-year signature again. What about this 3,600-year signature? What does Villikowski have to say? And I quote again from his book, Earth in Upheaval. Careful investigation by Johnson of the Niagara riverbed disclosed that the present channel was cut by the falls less than 4,000 years ago. And equally careful investigation of the Bear River Delta by Hansen showed that the age of this delta was 3,600 years. The study by Claude Jones of the lakes of the Great Basin showed that these lakes, remnants of larger glacial lakes, have existed only about 3,500 years. Gales obtained the same results on Owen Lake in California and also Van Winkle on Albert and Summer Lakes in Oregon. Radiocarbon analysis by Libby also indicates that plants associated with extinct animals, mastodons, in Mexico are probably only 3,500 years old. Similar conclusions concerning the late survival of the Pleistocene fauna were drawn by various field workers in many parts of the American continent. Seuss and Rubin found with the help of radiocarbon analysis that in the mountains of the western United States, ice advanced only 3,000 years ago. The Florida fossil beds at Vero and Melbourne proved, by the artifacts found there together with human bones and the remains of animals, many of which are extinct, that the fossil beds were deposited between 2,000 and 4,000 years ago. From observations on beaches in numerous places all over the world, Daly concluded that there was a change in the ocean level which dropped 16 to 20 feet 3,500 years ago. Kuhn and others confirmed Daly's findings with recent findings with evidence derived from Europe. End of the quote from Earth in Upheaval. Others have also taken note, Loy Pei, for instance, and I quote from his website, "Stratigraphy is the science of reading geological strata, which are ribbon-like layers of rock that were at one time sand, soil, or volcanic output. Sand or soil was washed into place by long extinct rivers or settled to the bottom of long extinct seas or lakes. Lava flows appear much quicker and are usually much thicker. Strata can reveal many things. What was the magnetic alignment of the Earth when a strata was deposited? Was magnetic north where it is today, pointing to the equator, or to where Zanzibar is now? Strata are the telltales of geological history. They can provide views into the past that are often remarkable and sometimes astonishing. One of the lesser known but highly important aspects of stratigraphy is that it provides an unambiguous record of global catastrophes. Shifts of the magnetic poles are only one of a range of events chronicled in stone. Earthquakes of great antiquity can be read and dated. Volcanic eruptions. Mountains rise and fall. Rivers change course. Floodplains shrink or expand. Glaciers wax and wane. All leave scars on the earth that end up in the geological record. But what causes the seasons to change? Better yet, what causes ice ages? What causes the many fluctuations recorded within each ice age? Is there a pattern to any of it? Can there be a recognizable cycle in a river's seasonal flooding or Earth's cataclysmic ice ages? Yes. As Roger Cunningham was reading through the section of the second edition of the Encyclopedia of Human Evolution and Prehistory by Farland Publishing, dated 2000, a book dealing with these matters, something caused him to put his thinking cap on, and being a number cruncher at heart, he decided to play around with what he had read. It wasn't long before one very important number literally leaped off the calculator at him. 3,600. End of the quote from Lloyd Pei. And none other than Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact has found a similar 3,600-year signature. And I quote from ABC News, July 15, 1999. The rains stopped coming. The temperature rose and the great grassland of North Africa turned to desert a few thousand years ago. Changes that may have helped spur development of civilization in the Nile Valley 4,000 to 3,600 years ago, according to a paper published today by the journal Geophysical Research Letters, was very severe, Ruining Ancient Civilizations and Socioeconomic Systems. A team of researchers, headed by Martin Clausen of Germany's Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research, analyzed computer models of climate over the past several thousand years. They concluded that the change to today's desert climate in the Sahara was triggered by changes in the Earth's orbit and the tilt of the Earth's axis. At that time, the Northern Hemisphere received more summer sunlight, which amplified the African and Indian summer monsoon, they reported. The switch in North Africa's climate and vegetation was abrupt. In the Sahara, we find an abrupt decrease in vegetation from a green Sahara to a desert shrubland within a few hundred years. End of the quote from ABC News. So what else happened 3,600 years ago? We've got the Jewish exodus, the mammoths going extinct, the sea level dropping worldwide by 18 to 20 feet, the Sahara drying up. Anything else? Well, 3,600 years ago, Thera, a monstrous volcano in the Mediterranean, erupted on the island of Santorini, as did Vesuvius. The eruption at Thera was 20 times as massive as Krakatoa in 1883. And I quote from Science Digest, September-October 1980. According to current data, the last two great eruptions of Vesuvius occurred in 3580 before the current epoch, and 79 CE, the latter being the eruption which buried Pompeii. Both Krakatoa and Thera have a volcanic explosive index of 6, which rates them as colossal. And I quote from the book Pompeii of the Ancient Aegean, page 141. When Krakatoa exploded on August 26, 1883, it erupted noisily. It could be heard as much as 3,000 miles away on Rodriguez Island in the Indian Ocean. Vibrations shattered shop windows 80 miles off. The energy released in the main explosion has been estimated to be equivalent to an explosion of 150 megatons of TNT. End of the quote. And trees in Sweden show the mark of this explosion and helped establish the date as 1628 before Christ. Given that the Zetas say the actual passage period for Planet X, also known as Nibiru, is 3,657 years, this puts the date of the passage very near, well, now. And I quote from the Associated Press, dated September 14, 2000, an article titled, Ancient Trees May Explain Story of Atlantis. Researchers say ancient tree stumps found in a Swedish peat bog may hold a record of the Great Volcanic Blast. Major volcanic eruptions have been known to blast enough dust into the atmosphere to cause frosts and limit crop growth, and one of the most powerful such blasts occurred when the Greek island of Santorini blew up in the mid-1600s before Christ. Carbon dating and the severe magnitude of this phenomenon suggests that it can be ascribed to the 1628 to 1627 before Christ event, hence providing new evidence of a wider, more northerly area of influence, the team of Swedish scientists reported in the September 15th issue of Geophysical Research Letters. End of the quote. And in China, it was written during the reign of Emperor Qi, circa 1600 before Christ. The Qi Dynasty. In the 28th year of King Qi, the last ruler of Sai, the earliest recorded Chinese dynasty, the sun was dimmed. The sun was distressed. During the last year of Qi, ice formed in summer mornings and frosts in the sixth month, which was July. Heavy rainfall toppled temples and buildings. Heaven gave severe orders. The sun and moon were untimely. Hot and cold weather arrived in disorder. The five cereal crops withered and died. End of the quote. Sounds like the distress preceding a pole shift with the sun and moon untimely. What about 7,200 years ago? 3,600 times 2. And I quote from Geoscience, an article titled Tsunami Along the South Coast of New South Wales, Australia. The first event probably occurred concomitantly with the rise of the Holocene sea level near modern levels, around 7,000 before the present. The impact of these tsunami upon the coastal landscape has been profound. Several signatures provide estimates of the magnitude of runoff of these events. The largest tsunami waves swept sediment across the continental shelf and obtained flow depths 15 to 20 meters at the coastline, with velocities in excess of 10 meters per second. Along cliffs, and especially at Jervis Bay, waves reached elevations of 40 to 100 meters, with evidence of flow depths in excess of 15 meters. Recent work indicates that the southeast coast of Australia may not be the only coast to be affected by catastrophic tsunami. The geomorphic signatures of such events have been found on Lord Howe Island in the mid-Tasman Sea, along the North Queensland coast, and along the northwest coast of Western Australia. Bedrock sculpting features have been identified on the islands of Hawaii and along the east coast of Scotland. The latter location is within the zone affected by the tsunami generated by a large submarine landslide near Storvika, Norway, also 7,000 years ago. End of the quote. A tsunami affecting Australia and Scotland and Norway all at the same time? Sounds global to me. And I quote from BBC, "A giant wave flooded Scotland about 7,000 years ago," a scientist revealed on Friday. "The tsunami left a trail of destruction along what is now the eastern coast of the country. Scientists believe a landslide on the ocean floor off Storvika, southwest Norway, triggered the wave." Speaking at the British Association Festival of Science in Glasgow, Professor David Smith said a tsunami could strike again in the area, but the probability was extremely unlikely. "It looks as if those people were happily sitting in their camps when this wave from the sea hit the camp," Professor Smith of the Department of Geology at Coventry University told BBC News Online. End of the quote. And did this tsunami affecting Norway and Scotland, a landslide along the coastline there, cause the Black Sea to form? All these events around 7,200 years ago, a multiple of 3,600, are oddly coincidental, that 3,600-year signature. And I quote from the Washington Post, dated November 18, 1999, an article titled, "For Noah's Flood, A New Wave of Evidence." Scientists have discovered an ancient coastline 550 feet below the surface of the Black Sea, providing dramatic new evidence of a sudden catastrophic flood around 7,500 years ago, the possible source of the Old Testament story of Noah. A team of deep sea explorers this summer captured the first sonar images of a gentle berm and a sandbar submerged undisturbed for thousands of years on the seafloor. Now, using radiocarbon dating techniques, analysts have shown that the remains of freshwater mollusks subsequently dredged from the ancient beach date back to 7,500 years, and saltwater species began showing up 6,900 years ago. The findings offer independent verification of a theory advanced by Columbia University geologists William Ryan and Walter Pittman that the Black Sea was created when melting glaciers raised the sea level until the sea breached a natural dam at what is now the Bosphorus, the strait that separates the Mediterranean Sea from the Black Sea. An apocalyptic deluge followed, inundating the freshwater lake below the dam, submerging thousands of square miles of dry land, flipping the ecosystem from freshwater to salt practically overnight, and probably killing thousands of people and billions of land and sea creatures, according to Ryan and Pittman. The two scientists described the catastrophe in their book, Noah's Flood, based on 30 years of research that began with coring samples showing the same abrupt transition from lake to sea that Ballard confirmed with his dredge. No one had ever actually seen the old shoreline, however, until Ballard's team captured sonar images of it in August. End of the quote from Washington Post. Well, they're not taking into consideration what went on in Australia in the same time period. micro-examining the event and take into consideration that volcanoes were also involved at that same time period. Did the tsunami cause the volcano? And I quote from Seattle Times, September 10th, 1996 issue. An article about research ships from the Joint Oceanographic Institutes for the Deep Earth Sampling Resolution. And I quote, they could easily see the light-colored ash deposited from the eruption of Oregon's Mount Mazama 6,950 years ago. That titanic eruption created Crater Lake and threw out at least 40 times as much magma as Mount St. Helens did in 1980 and serves as a useful marker to date mud layers. End of the quote. Water rushing into the coastlines of Australia, submerging western Scotland, inundating Norway, and moving enough earth to block the Black Sea from the Mediterranean. Does water move like this during a pole shift? I quote from Zeta Talk, Tidal Waves, written July 1995. As great as the danger to humans and the fauna and flora of the earth that earthquakes bring, greater still is the devastation that the shifting waters will bring. There are several factors at play. Water is more liquid than the core of the earth, and certainly more liquid than terra firma. Where the earth, dragged by its core, is shifting into a new alignment with planet X, its waters resist greatly. Thus the waters slosh over the nearby land, in the direction opposite to the shift. The earth's record of gigantic tidal waves, which the establishment is desperate to explain in other than pole shift terms, is caused by the frequent pole shifts. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. And I quote again from Villikowski's Earth in Upheaval. Bones of whale have been found 440 feet above sea level, north of Lake Ontario. A skeleton of another whale was discovered in Vermont, more than 500 feet above sea level, and still another in the Montreal, Quebec area, about 600 feet above sea level. Although the humphrey whale and beluga occasionally enter the mouth of the St. Lawrence, they do not climb hills. End of the quote from Villikowski. How does a whale arrive 500, 600 feet above sea level, as this is an established fact, one the scientific community cannot even begin to explain? And I quote from Zeta Talk, Flood Tide, written June 2001. Tidal waves are often shown as rising high, a tower of water crashing down upon hapless humans standing in horror on a beach. Where a wave generated by an underwater displacement, such as occurs when plates adjust due to subduction during an earthquake, will roll in a deadly line of pressure until the shore is reached and then rise up when the depth of water is reduced as the water rolls up the beach, this does not occur when the whole of the ocean is on the move. It is rather a flood tide, as the oceans are climbing out of their beds into higher ground, so the leading edge is the highest point of the wave. In tsunami, a single line of pressure moves through the ocean, transferring water pressure rapidly from the quake point to where it must stop, at land, thus finally crashing upon a beach. During a pole shift, there is no single line of pressure. The ocean as a whole is on the move because it stays behind while the crust moves and thus rolls up on land onto the coastline being pulled under it. This is a flood tide, with the lip of the water being its highest point, rising like a silent tide endlessly on the rise, the wave rolling inland without a crashing back and forth, just a steady, progressive inundation. Waves caused by an asteroid crash are akin to what children see when they drop a boulder into a pond or puddle. As with a tsunami caused by a subducting plate, where the water is under great pressure at a certain point and transfers this pressure in a line in the direction it was first thrown, the boulder will cause a sudden line of water pressure away from the impact point. That water rising directly upward drops quickly to the surface, the splash, but the water within the pond moves the line of pressure outward, visible only as a ripple on the surface of the water until the edge of the pond is reached where it becomes a lapping wave. Asteroid-generated waves are thus tall, crashing upon the shore. Whalebones on mountaintops well inland were not lifted by tsunami waves, nor carried inland atop such a wave. A wave would not be close enough to shore to be caught in such an occurrence. They arrived at these inland mountaintops because the entire ocean was moving, and they could not escape that momentum. Thus caught, they were deposited in rocky crags, where fast-flowing waters moved quickly away from them through cracks, too tight a squeeze for the hapless whale left floundering behind. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. And 10,800 years ago, three multiples back of 3,600, I quote from Fox News, dated February 25, 2000, an article called Ice Age Forest Gives a Global Warning. The discovery of a forest 11,000 years old buried intact in Michigan, with treetops poking through the sand, has raised alarm about the possible speed of global warming. The 5-acre forest of hundreds of spruce, just over 10 miles from the shore of Lake Superior, was covered with sand and water when a nearby glacier melted at the end of the Ice Age. What has shocked scientists is that the analysis of the tree rings shows that the climate warmed so rapidly that it left no mark on the normal growth of the trees before they were flooded. The conclusion, based on the tree rings, is that there was no real warning of the dramatic warming that caused the glacier to melt, said Theodor Bornhorst, professor of geology at Michigan's Technological University. End of the quote. And so it goes, the Earth holding evidence to the periodic passage of Planet X, the 3,600-year signature. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Past Cataclysms, written February 1996. The Earth bears witness to the cataclysms in her past and their periodic occurrence. Beyond her deep wound in the Pacific Basin and beyond the drift of her continents, there are scars more palpable by man. Mountain cliffs, which rise sheer in many cases thousands of feet, represent tearing of solid rock. These stand before mankind, who even makes a hobby of scaling their heights, ignoring their deeper meaning. Have any experiments been done to determine how much force would be required to tear a rock of this depth? None have. The reason lies in the equally deep desire of mankind to avoid thinking about the Earth's past cataclysms. Beneath the sea in the Bahamas lies evidence of civilizations that went under the waves. Highways and highway markers clearly man-made. These areas have been explored by many fortune hunters, recorded by camera, and published in full color repeatedly. Likewise, ancient Incan cities stand so high in altitude that the cities could not have been built, much less lived in. Yet the scientific community continues to claim that Earth changes happen gently, inch by inch, at the pace experienced during the memory of their current civilization. Antarctica bears witness to her past as a steamy swamp, and likewise the North Seas where oil is extracted. Likewise, the temperate regions are scarred by what is termed the Ice Ages, where these regions were as snow and ice-packed as the poles. A clue to these changes lies in the magnetism frozen in hardened lava, which demonstrates that magnetic north and south changed now and then. Has any adequate explanation been proffered by the scientific community? None has, as all the explanations have the Earth's thin crust remaining in place, as the thought that they are standing on a raft that can move on a sea of magma beneath them is too frightening to contemplate. End of quote from Zeta Talk. That concludes our broadcast. Thank you for being with us. Remember to carry love in your heart. It's the commodity of the future. As the Zetas say, love may have a blooming going into the shift, as it ought, those with great love in their hearts responding to the realization that little else matters.